A Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. I'm Halima Shah.
I had a friend named Camel. He used to rob, steal, and gamble. He tried everything that was low down.
This is Jimmie Rodgers. You may have heard of him, but if you haven't, know this. In a short 6-year recording career, he managed to become the father of country music. Seriously, his plaque at the Country Music Hall of Fame calls him, quote, the man who started it all. Rodgers grew up in Mississippi and worked on the railroad from childhood. On the tracks, little Jimmie learned about life. But he learned a lot about music. He was a sponge, soaking up all the sights and sounds around him. Here's musicologist Mary Davis, who edited a book about Jimmie Rodgers.
He was around blues. He was around hillbilly music. He was around American roots music. He was exposed to African-American work song.
Even when Rodgers became a full-time musician, his railroad years were never entirely behind him. Davis says that Jimmie did something that no one else did before him. He took morsels of different musical traditions that he encountered in his railroad work, threw them all in one pot, and put them over a burner. Kind of like he was making musical gumbo.
He was the guy who pulled all those things together into something new and exciting.
You can hear his fusion of styles in songs like this one, called Everybody Does It in Hawaii. Or as Jimmie would say, Hawaii.
Everybody does it in Hawaii. The ukulele.
Well, one of the really interesting parts of that song, too, is how he harmonizes his yodeling with the steel guitar. And it kind of works.
It does. And again, this is a really distinctive, strange sound, don't you think? But the steel guitarist on this recording is a guy named Joseph Kaya Kaipo, who was, in fact, Hawaiian. And this was the third record he made with Rodgers in which he played steel guitar.
In fact, we know that Jimmie Rodgers performed with as many as 10 different Hawaiian steel guitarists. And those musicians played the sounds that today are considered a defining part of country music. But the names of his bandmates aren't listed in the liner notes. And they're definitely not in the Country Music Hall of Fame. And that's because the story of the birth of country music and music in the American South more broadly has been oversimplified. Basically, that the earliest country music was made by white musicians, essentially in a vacuum. And blues? It's a genre developed by African Americans in the segregated South. And yet the real story of Southern music isn't so tidy. There were so many other musical traditions at play, including, yep, Hawaiians.
What we do know is that the Hawaiian influence in country music is something that started with Rodgers and continued on down through country music and still exists to this day.
So this time on Side Door, we're telling the long overlooked story of how Hawaiian performers changed the sound of American music. They inspired icons like Jimmie Rodgers and influenced country and blues and rock music pretty much from the beginning with an indigenous Hawaiian invention, the steel guitar.
I'm 1,000 miles away from home, just waiting for a train.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for Smithsonian Side Door comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/sidedoor. That's odoo.com/sidedoor.
One of the most dramatic events in Hawaiian history took place on January 17, 1893. A militia of mostly Americans barricaded themselves inside the Capitol building of Hawaii and demanded that the kingdom's very popular queen, Liliuokalani, step down. And within a few years, Hawaii would be annexed into the United States. The overthrow came after decades of colonization and efforts to gather wealth and power into the hands of a few American oligarchs. Just a century earlier, Hawaii first came into contact with Westerners. And things were rocky from the start. Americans and Europeans eyed it as a port, the perfect mid-Pacific stop for goods flowing between the U.S. and Asia. But after decades of global trade, a coup, and the Queen's arrest, Hawaii had radically transformed. Here's John Troutman, American music historian and curator at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History.
Well, the overthrow of the Queen is unexpected, and it's horrific, and it's traumatic in 1893. And the Hawaiian people spend the next few years strategizing on how to reverse the conditions and to restore the kingdom.
But powerful non-native families made efforts to prevent that from happening. Key parts of Hawaiian culture were banned. The language, surfing, hula, all with varying degrees of success. Amid the political turmoil, Hawaiians resisted by holding on to their culture. Queen Liliuokalani herself was a prolific composer of songs while under house arrest, and Hawaiian musicians performed those songs for large audiences. During this time of patriotic musicality, a young man named Joseph Keikuku was growing up in a town called La'ie.
La'ie was essentially formed as a Mormon community. Mormons in the United States at the time were being persecuted and pushed westward, onward and onward. Eventually, they sought refuge in Hawaii. And one of the things that the Mormons had learned was that if they essentially let them kind of do their thing in terms of maintaining their cultural traditions while they attempted to proselytize and convert them to Mormonism, then they would gain greater success. So Joseph Keikuku came from a community of Native Hawaiians who were living among these Mormon missionaries.
These missionaries figured out that they had a better shot of earning the trust and faith of Hawaiians if they let them live out their culture, which meant Joseph Keikuku's hometown stayed a very musical place.
One of the really interesting things about La'ie is that literally dozens of well-known and great Hawaiian musicians grew up there.
Keikuku's parents were devout Mormons who ended up moving to Utah for a few years. But Joseph stayed behind and enrolled in the Kamehameha School for Boys. The school was made to teach Native Hawaiians, and it's a really musical place. Even today, they host a traditional Hawaiian music competition that's broadcast on TV all around the state.
Joseph enrolled in the school and had been playing music for all of his life, playing some of the most popular modern Hawaiian songs of their day in the 1880s and early 1890s.
So picture this. Joseph Keikuku is in high school, living in a dorm with some friends, and playing music in his free time.
And while Joseph was a student, he begins to develop a new technique for playing the guitar.
So the popular story goes this way. Joseph Keikuku was walking along some railroad tracks, as one does. He found a railway spike. He put it in his pocket. He went back to his dorm room later that day and started playing the guitar. Then, in a moment of inspiration, he ran the steel railroad tie along the guitar strings and started strumming. And he noticed this. The steel made a soft, lilting sound that was different from usual guitar strumming.
I think what's really important to take note of here in the story about the steel guitar is that people have been running objects over strings all over the world for centuries on end.
But here's where Keikuku is unique.
He took the guitar, modified it, created a tool to play on top of the strings of the guitar.
Joseph Keikuku created a smooth metal cylinder in his high school's machine shop to run over the guitar's fretboard, that thin neck part, while he strummed. He also raised the strings higher off the fretboard to give the steel cylinder some extra clearance. And he practiced.
And got very good at it, refined it, and made it musical. He developed a technique that could be replicated by others.
And to me, this is kind of the wildest part of the whole story. His friends and classmates started playing this way too. And pretty quickly, musicians all around Honolulu picked up his invention. This song is Aloha Oi, and it's only like the most famous Hawaiian song of all time. You might know it from Disney's Lilo and Stitch, but it was actually written by Queen Liliuokalani. This version is being played by Alan Akaka, and he's kind of the guy if you want to learn how to play Hawaiian guitar. He lives outside of Honolulu, but he teaches students all over the United States by Skype. He feels so strongly about the steel guitar that he actually petitioned the Hawaiian legislature to make it the state's official stringed instrument instead of the ukulele.
And what I told the legislators is that the ukulele was adapted and adopted by the locals here because it came from Portugal originally. It was not invented in Hawaii. The steel guitar, however, was.
The Hawaiian government still went with the ukulele. Anyway, Akaka fit me in between lessons for a quick intro to the steel guitar. So when we talk about Joseph Keikuku's steel guitar, you should picture this.
The steel guitar is an instrument with strings like a guitar played normally on the lap, the lap steel guitar, unless it has legs, and use a bar of some sort to slide over the strings.
These days, the steel guitar can come in a lot of different shapes and styles. Some are acoustic, others are electric, but they all evolved from the instrument that Keikuku invented. How do you play the steel guitar?
Okay, so I'm holding a bar in my left hand, a metal bar made of steel, thus the name steel guitar. That's where it came from.
At this point, Alan reached for these kind of short metal claws and slipped them onto three of his fingers. And what is that that you just put on your fingers?
Finger picks. I have a pick for my thumb and my pointer and middle finger. Now, just to let you know that early in the 20th century, this guitar was known as a Hawaiian guitar. The steel guitar name came up later. I'm not sure when, but later on. So, you know, this is what a steel guitar. I can actually slide over. People love sliding like that. They love hearing that, especially this octave slide. Yeah.
So how would you describe that sound?
The sound of Hawaii.
So that's the steel guitar. But here's the thing. Joseph Keikuku invented this in 1885. But by 1916, Hawaiian music records starring the steel guitar were outselling every other genre of music in the United States. And it's very likely that Jimmy Rogers would have first heard Hawaiian music and steel guitar right around then. So coming up after the break, we find out how this uniquely Hawaiian invention made its way into the hands of generations of Americans who played country music, blues, and rock. This is the sound of the steel guitar, and some say it's the sound of Hawaii. But it wasn't always. A teenager named Joseph Keikuku invented this sound by taking a normal acoustic guitar and modifying it. The steel guitar quickly spread all around the world, fueled in part because many native Hawaiians were leaving the islands, afraid of what would happen to them once Americans took over.
And so we see this kind of, this dispersion of Hawaiian people, dancers and singers, leaving the island right around the 1890s and early 1900s.
That's Smithsonian American music historian and curator John Troutman again.
In part because they knew that by traveling, they could continue to perform their traditions that were being prohibited in the islands. And partly because they were quite concerned about what was going to happen in the islands.
So as part of this diaspora, Joseph Keikuku left for the U.S. mainland in 1904. He lived up and down the West Coast and within a few years settled in Seattle, where he taught students his steel guitar techniques and played with other Hawaiian musicians. And Keikuku's music found a receptive audience. Shortly after he moved to Seattle, a newspaper called him, quote, the world's greatest guitar soloist. It was because after 1910, two things happened that created a national obsession with America's new exotic islands and their culture. The first, a play named Bird of Paradise opened on Broadway. That's from a film adaptation of the same play. And the play spurred the public's appetite for all things Hawaiian. Think of it as the Hamilton of its day. It toured the country for 9 years, playing 112 shows in New York, and slowly worked its way down to some of the country's smallest towns, from Anaconda, Montana, to Xenia, Ohio. And while this was going on, the San Francisco World's Fair opened.
So by 1915, when one of the more significant World's Fairs opens in San Francisco, many Americans had been prepared already and had become acclimated to the sound of Hawaiian music and had become entranced by it. But it's really celebrated at that fair for the first time in terms of propelling the popularity of those musical traditions.
An estimated 19 million people visited the World Fair and had the opportunity to hear the steel guitar performances in the Hawaii Pavilion that the island's government, now part of the U.S., used to attract tourists. So in a period of about 15 years, the Hawaiian steel guitar transformed from a charming regional sound to part of mainstream American music. And its influence reaches beyond the country sound of Jimmy Rogers. It also influenced early blues musicians. As part of the Bird of Paradise shows and a lot of other independent Hawaiian acts traveling from town to town, many Hawaiian musicians toured the South. In a part of the country where African Americans faced especially intense racial aggression and repressive laws daily, Native Hawaiians found themselves navigating segregation as well.
After their performances, they would all kind of end up in these boarding homes, and this included mariachis, Chinese acrobats, and all these other performers hanging out, playing music together, having really good times together. So they were kind of making the most of those conditions and learning from each other.
So do we see any evidence that these Hawaiian guitarists were influencing other musicians of color at these boarding houses at the time? Are there any signs of those musical traditions kind of melding together?
Well, what we can find are accounts from many, you know, early guitar players who associated with the blues, for example, where they recall their earliest knowledge of kind of that slide guitar technique as the Hawaiian way of playing guitar. They refer to it specifically as the Hawaiian way of playing. So in fact, in one interview that Son House, who's considered kind of the patriarch of this slide guitar blues style, as he recounted in 1965.
Son House was doing an interview in the 1960s. With researchers eager to mythologize blues music as an exclusively African American art form.
I got a letter this morning, how do you bring it red?
So they are really anxious to understand these traditions that they see rooted really in slavery or in West Africa more than anything else. So there's this one interview with Son House where he's kind of being harassed by these kind of blues experts.
And these blues experts were keen to understand where Son House learned to play his very distinct style of slide guitar.
At first he says, well, actually, guitars weren't really a big thing in the South when I was a kid. They didn't play guitars. They played the trombone. They played the cornet, these instruments that were associated really with marching music more than anything else. By the time that he was around, you know, 11 years old or so, the guitars began to kind of float around a little bit. So they keep asking him, so where did that come from? Where was that first slide guitar that you heard? And he said, well, the first, oh, you mean the Hawaiian way of playing? Okay. And then he tells the story of the people that started demonstrating to him the Hawaiian style of playing music.
Other early blues stars like Robert Johnson and Blind Lemon Jefferson were known to hold the guitar flat in their lap and fingerpick, like Joseph Kakuku did and Alan Akaka does today.
There are really specific instances where musicians of color in the South are calling this out as a Hawaiian style of playing.
A number of blues influences are traced back to West Africa. So it's long been thought that the blues slide guitar evolved from the diddley bow, an instrument of West African origin. But Troutman thinks that the blues slide guitar has its roots in the Pacific.
There are no accounts of that, of the diddley bow technology existing in the written record until the 1930s. So I think, you know, the blues scholars really just kind of assumed a lot. I mean, and it's that's understandable because, you know, but in the 1960s, 1970s, there were two kinds of Southern music. There was black music and white music. There was no kind of thought given to Hawaiians at the time.
Are you making a very radical case here right now?
I am suggesting that the preponderance of evidence demonstrates that that technology and that technique derived from Hawaii and not from West Africa in the South. And that doesn't sit well with a number of blues scholars.
My mind is blown. Troutman says that he's not surprised that the story of Hawaiians having a profound influence on the sound of popular American music isn't commonly told. Because, yeah, music holds important cultural data. It helped Hawaiians and their culture survive colonization, and it helped people heal. But music is also big business.
I grew up in Alabama, and I think that a lot of people in the South now and people who think about Southern music and ask the question of what that is, typically imagine a very black and white world in the sense that a lot of the genres that seem to have developed in the South, such as country music being kind of the white hillbilly music, blues being black music of African Americans in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. And in part, in large part, that's due to the fact that the music industry itself began categorizing music along racial lines in the 1920s.
Record companies marketed performers like, oh, let's just pick two totally random names, Son House and Jimmy Rogers. Those artists were recorded for their remarkable musical talent, but also their music fit into the black and white story that had already been established.
The problem, however, is that when you really begin to dig into the music making itself that was taking place in the South in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, you hear influences that are all over the place. And you also realize that there are people in many different communities in the South who are participating, including American Indians, and in this case, Native Hawaiians, who were embedded in Southern communities or touring through them and gathering together these kind of music-making moments that really cast a wide cultural net across the traditions that they were kind of embodying in their performance.
What eventually happens to Kakuku?
Oh, well, let's see. Joseph Kakuku spends his 20s and 30s crisscrossing the North American continent. He ends up living in Europe for a time. He moves to England, I think, around 1916, if I remember correctly, and begins playing in cafes in Paris. His name's kind of all over the newspapers in those locations.
After traveling the world and playing his signature brand of Hawaiian music, Joseph Kakuku settled in New Jersey, where he died in 1932. He lived long enough to see the Hawaiian steel guitar, his invention, be adopted by thousands of musicians all around the world.
His technique, his style of playing, his ingenuity resulted in the total kind of sonic transformation of all of the music that would become known as country and blues and rock and roll and all these other genres as well.
And this music, the sound of the steel guitar, was the sound of resistance and helped Native Hawaiians safeguard their culture when it was being threatened. And today, Joseph Kakuku's name isn't memorialized in the U.S. in a way that's comparable to his musical contributions. Yes, we are talking about you, Country Music Hall of Fame. Although he is in the Steel Guitar Hall of Fame. But his sound and the sound of Hawaii still echo in American popular music. From the Rolling Stones to George Clinton's Funkadelic, and of course, Miley Cyrus.
I got my sights set on you.
The steel guitar plays on. You've been listening to Side Door, a podcast from the Smithsonian with support from PRX. This episode marks the end of season 3, and also the end of my time with you as host. I've had so much fun sharing these fascinating, surprising, and at times just plain weird stories with you over the last season. And even though I'm saying goodbye to the Side Door team, the podcast isn't going anywhere. After a quick break, Side Door will be back in June for season 4. With a new voice and more exciting stories. Side Door is made possible by funding from the Secretary of the Smithsonian, as well as the Smithsonian National Board. And thanks to listeners like you. Your generous support helps make all the amazing work you hear about at the Smithsonian possible. This week's story was part of the Smithsonian Year of Music. If you want to learn more about the 365 days of music at the Smithsonian, go to music.si.edu. We'd also like to give a special thanks to John Troutman at the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History for helping us tell this story. If you'd like to learn more about the Hawaiian steel guitar and its history, check out Troutman's book, Kikakila, How the Hawaiian Steel Guitar Changed the Sound of Modern Music. Our podcast team is Justin O'Neill, Jason Orfanon, Lizzie Peabody, Jess Sadek, Greg Fisk, and Lara Koch. Extra support comes from John Barth and Genevieve Sponsler. Our show is mixed by Tarek Fuda. Our theme song and other episode music are by Breakmaster Cylinder. Additional music in this episode is by Jeremy Sherman. If you want to sponsor our show, please email sponsorship@prx.org. For the last time, I'm your host, Halima Shah. Thanks for listening. Everybody does it in Hawaii. Okay.
I love how you closed your eyes and swayed.
Support for Smithsonian Side Door comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is the only software your business will ever need. Featuring a suite of integrated business applications, Odoo connects your business operations together so you can get more done in less time. Odoo has apps for everything: CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, marketing, manufacturing, you name it. Odoo's got it. To learn more, visit odoo.com/sidedoor. That's odoo.com/sidedoor. From PRX.